You are a media professor and you are here about community radio, so we were wondering, what do people call a community radio in the USA?
Well, in many cases, it's not too much different from what you're doing here. I understand that everyone who's on the air here is a volunteer.
Yes.
Is that correct? It's very common in the U.S. As I found in Europe, we have stations that are in large cities, New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, and we have stations that serve small rural areas. We have stations that serve unserved populations. Very close to where I live in Oregon, we have a station that broadcasts in Spanish to the migrant community that works the farms. So community radio comes in all shapes and sizes in the U.S. And
so what we find a very important aspect of our radio is that we are completely independent financially. Now, not many radios manage to do that in the northern part of Belgium, at least. But how do those radios exist?
It seems like money is always a struggle. And it doesn't matter what market size you're in. And sometimes I think it's easier in the smaller cities where the stations don't have as much competition. When they, for instance, the Spanish language station I was speaking of in Woodburn, they're entirely supported by listeners on small contributions, but it's a small operation, not much power, and they have a very modest facility. So they're just trying to keep their service going. It's actually much harder for the stations that are in the large urban areas where the rents are much higher and where they have to pay costs for being on antennas and that kind of thing. So. And for the larger stations, often they're looking for other sources of income besides just donations from listeners. Do you have relationships with businesses who contribute to support your station?
We don't at all.
So you're entirely funded with listener contributions?
Yes, more or less.
No, not even that.
Radio Central is funded solely by, first of all, the contributions of the people who make the programs.
We all pay €5 a month.
So your producers are the ones that are helping to pay the cost?
Basically, yes.
Right, okay. Right. In the U.S., it's not as common for the producers to pay the cost for the station. Sometimes there's a fee associated with training. They may have sort of annual dues, that kind of thing, but it's much more common to go on the air and ask listeners to contribute and support what we're doing. And then on top of that, there are other sources of revenue. It's not uncommon to ask businesses to contribute, and especially the entertainment places. And
okay, but wouldn't that affect the content of the programs?
Depends on the relationship. There are businesses that are more attuned to what you're doing and are really contributing in the spirit of community radio, and then there are others who are just sort of looking for advertising. So it really comes down to the person who's, canvassing the town and asking for the funds. And then there are sometimes granting agencies. The Spanish language station that I was speaking of, when you're serving something like a farm worker population, sometimes you can tap into social service funds because they see the radio station as a way to get information out to that population when they otherwise wouldn't get it. That's not very common, but...
And that's non-commercial information.
It's non-commercial information,
okay.
Yeah. But information about different social programs, they see it as a partnership between the radio station and the social program.
And how long have there been community radios in your country?
It depends on where you want to start. Usually people talk about 1948 and KPFA in Berkeley. Have you ever heard of Lou Hill? He was a war resister in the Second World War. Served his time in the camp with the resistors, and when he came out, worked for a time in commercial broadcasting in the nation's capital in Washington, D.C., and a lot of what he did was he read war bulletins. So after the war was over, he felt very strongly that he wanted to create a pacifist radio station, and he thought that the San Francisco Bay Area was the best place to do that. And that's where Pacifica Radio came from. And that started in 1948. It continues.
Dennis is arrived.
Anyway, so... So there were a few stations up until the 1960s, and then being the 1960s, you had a lot of young people. I was actually one of those people. who were active in their colleges and universities, sort of got the idea for community radio, went off, started their own stations all over the nation. Mm-hmm. Community radio really blossomed in the United States in the 1960s and 1970s.
Yeah, and do you how is it legally?
How is it?
You can exist.
Yeah. Yes. That for the most part, stations are licensed. There. Are you aware of the low power FM movement in the United States?
Yes. Well, they had a big victory.
Yes. Taken. Yes. They just got the FCC to release a band of spectrum. In this has sort of gone in waves. You get a lot of commercial pressure on the spectrum. You get a lot of stations. That means that there's not much availability. Some time will pass. The Federal Communications Commission will take a look at their maps, do a little reengineering. So we've had a couple of opportunities, first in the early 1980s, again in 2003, and then this most recent allotment. And the channels that they're opening up in the United States for legal non-commercial community broadcasting are not particularly attractive. They're not very high-power signals. But in particularly in urban areas, we've been able to open up these low-power channels for specialized services.
Okay. We have 15 seconds left. That's enough to thank you for coming to our studio. We'll talk on a bit more because the aim of your visit was also to get to know our station.
Certainly. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.